The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday Drive. What a beautiful day. It is just a gorgeous day today. It's the start of the home softball season for Auburn softball, a day away from the start of baseball. And looks like tomorrow and Saturday we're in for pretty good weather for baseball. Sunday, and right now that's questionable. We had a chance to talk with Butch Thompson and a couple of players a little while ago. If we get a chance, we'll let you hear some of that. We can talk about that as well. Okay. The weather looks really nice. Hope everybody having a good Thursday. Dan is down in Troy as the Troy women's basketball team looking to move into first place in the conference with a win there. He'll be back tomorrow. Coach Don Dunn will be joining me here in a few minutes, and we'll also be checking in on the phone with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. But we've got phone calls already as we come on the air, and we'll go ahead and get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Jeff gets us started here right off the bat. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I was at the basketball game the other night against Vandy. My question is this, and I've asked several people, and they don't know the answer. Do you know why Keyshawn Hall was held out of the game for the last 10 minutes?
Yeah, I think it was the frustration that Stephen Pearl felt. He felt the offense was completely out of sync with Keyshawn struggling and not able to make any shots. The offense just had been struggling. And Keyshawn, you know, Keyshawn is not the best defender on this team. He's had his moments. But yeah. But when, you know, at times he's let struggles on offense affect his defense even more, and I think that was sort of it. Plus, yeah, if you remember, he'd been teed up just a little bit before that as well. So I think it was a situation that began with, look, need to sit him down. Things aren't going so well. Auburn was down 15, remember? They'd gotten down by 15 at that point. And when Keyshawn went to the bench, Auburn started a little bit of a run. They had an 8-0 run, and they were able to cut it to single digits, and they eventually cut it. And I think it just got to the point where they were playing better defensively, and that's one of the things Stephen Pearl said after the ball game is how much better defensively Auburn was with Elijah Freeman in the ball game down the stretch. Elijah ended up leading the team in rebounds, and his long arms make things a little bit more difficult. So I think it was that. Now that still, you know, still leaves a question in a lot of folks' minds. Hey, once you get it close, don't you want your top scorer back in the ball game? But as Steven said, it was a coach's decision. So I don't think it's going to affect anything for Saturday night's game at Arkansas. But you know, it'll be really interesting. Let's see how Keyshawn, how his body language is early in the ball game.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you for your insight. I enjoy the show.
Appreciate the call, Jeff. Yeah, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline. And speaking of Auburn basketball, nobody covers it better or more in-depth than our good friend from the Auburn Observer, and that's Justin Ferguson, who now joins me here on the Drive hotline. Ferg, is that the way you felt about what was going on with Keyshawn Hall out the final 12-plus minutes the other night?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Auburn was playing better without him. And, yeah, I think it was kind of a combination of, yes, you know, Auburn's defense is usually better when he's not out there. But, you know, to the question of, like, okay, well, don't you need him on offense? Mm-hmm. Vandy had his number the other night. I mean, he went 0 for 8 on twos. And the only shots he hit were all kind of right in a row. They're back-to-back, wasn't really getting to the line. Vandy just really did a good job of defending him, and it was just not his night on offense. So when you're not getting the usual stuff out of Keyshawn Hall on the offensive end, and you need to prioritize, you know, you need to prioritize defense. That just made it an easier decision. I don't expect Keyshawn Hall to have very many games like that on offense.
No.
So it made it a little bit easier. But, yeah, I mean, it's just it was kind of a feel thing, kind of a gut thing from Stephen Pearl, just being like, all right, Elijah's playing well. Let's keep him in there. Hey, we're still in it. We're still in it. So it's kind of that. I mean, if it would have been different that if, like, you know, before the tech that Keyshawn Hall had, it'd have been different if he was hitting shots and he was getting to the line and he was, you know, it just was not his night on offense. It was a really off night for him, and Vandy did a good job taking away a lot of what he wanted to do. So for then, Auburn decided it made it easier for Auburn to go defense for offense there.
Yeah, and we were talking a little about the game yesterday. Obviously, talking a lot about the game yesterday, but it was a struggle for Auburn offensively, and that's something that hasn't been the case that much lately. I mean, it seems like lately we feel like, well, the offense has been pretty good, but things have got to tighten up defensively. You can't, you know, we were saying before the game, you can't allow another team to be scoring around 90 points in regulation. And Auburn, especially in the second half, and it sure wasn't coincidental with Elijah in the ball game, played a lot better, I thought, defensively there in the second half. They just really couldn't get the offense going.
Yeah, no, it took until about midway through the second half until you started seeing Auburn kind of get back to their kind of normal self on offense. You know, I thought they had a really good finish to the game. You started hitting some shots a little bit more. That's when you made the comeback. But, yeah, I mean, they were just – it was such a rough start for them on offense that they dug themselves into a hole. It was just hard to get out of. And so, yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it is they weren't able to get to the line as much as usual for whatever reason. I think the whistles weren't as tight as I think Auburn wanted them to be there in that first half. Keyshawn Hall couldn't get going like he usually did. And when that happens, it's just hard for your team to – you know, really get out of that rut on offense. So while I think defense is the big issue with this team, obviously, and that's what's got to continue to fix and be changed, like it did show you in this game, I mean, kind of the value there. It's like if you play bad defense, your offense isn't always going to be there for you to help bail you out. Auburn's won some games with ugly offense this season. It's just that was a really, you know, that's not the team. Vandy is not the team you want to get off to slow starts against. Because when they get leads, they do a good job of holding on to them because they play such disciplined basketball on both ends of the floor.
Oh, yeah. And so now you're faced with a three-game losing streak and a trip to Fayetteville on Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, good luck, right? Like, you know, this is one of those things where Auburn, like, we knew the middle six of SEC play was going to be pretty brutal. Auburn won the first two, but now losing these last three, they've lost to three really good teams. They've lost to three really good, like, very strong, you know, NCAA tournament-type squads. They're going to be probably top five, six seeds in the tournament this year. So what really you had if you're Auburn is, like, what you've done these last three games is you've missed opportunities more than you've hurt yourself. You've missed opportunities to help your resume. You've had a rivalry losses. You've lost at home. It's kind of more, you know, it's kind of more like just – you know, instead of like damaging to what your team is and what your ceiling is, it's, you know, it's really, really kind of taking some air out of that. So for Auburn, it's just, you got to regather, you got to focus up here down the stretch. And then you get all, you know, Arkansas on Saturday night, you know, you beat Arkansas pretty soundly that first game in Neville, but that was such a weird game. Cause I felt like Arkansas never really got going in that one. And Auburn did a really good job of really defending an awesome offense, and that was really the start of where you started to see Auburn really start to bring it together a little more consistently on the defensive end of the floor. You know, I would expect Arkansas to be a lot better at home. I would expect Arkansas to play harder at home. And but, yeah, I mean, it's just you don't want to sound like you're beating a dead horse at this point, but you look at guys like Darius Acuff, Javon Brazil, and some of those guys for Arkansas – I mean, the difference between their offense when they win and when they lose is pretty staggering. So, like, Auburn's got to bring plenty of defense, and I think a tweaked defense to Fayetteville with them on Saturday. If not, it could very well, you know, be a fourth straight loss, and then now you hit the final six of SEC play. Now you're in kind of, all right, you got some must-win. You absolutely have to have some of these games down the stretch, and so you can help yourself out a lot on Saturday if you're Auburn, if you were somehow able to beat Arkansas on the road. But I think it's going to take a lot of like what you did at Florida a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You got to play some really, really tough defense for 40 minutes to beat a really good team like this on the road.
And you have to count on Arkansas sort of falling into the trap that Florida did. I mean, I thought when the teams played over at Neville Arena, Arkansas settled for an awful lot of outside shots. They didn't really try to get the ball inside. It was sort of like what we talked about with Auburn there for the Tennessee and the Alabama games. Is even though Auburn has surrendered a high percentage of threes, Arkansas is not a team that has to just rely on that. They're athletic and have enough size to be able to go inside, and they've been doing more of that lately as they've been winning.
Yeah, and they've got a lead guard play that guys can go one-on-one and get downhill mm-hmm. on you, especially Darius Acuff. Malik Thomas is really good at it as well. And, Arkansas has just had to kind of grind it out here. You know, they've hung in this SEC championship race. They're down two of their key guys right now. We'll see what kind of the injury situation will be for them. But, you know, they've been down Carter Knox and Billy Richmond here recently, and it's just, you know, they've had to play seven guys and just stick it out. But they're elite on the offensive end, especially at home. And you're right, like, they don't have to necessarily hit a bunch of threes to beat you. It's kind of an outlier, you know, this last game. They killed LSU on the road, barely taking any threes or hitting any threes. So this is a team that's very confident in getting downhill. I mean, it's a Calipari team, right? You know, it's a
yeah.
team that's
mm-hmm.
got a lot of good, talented one-on-one scorers with, you know, five stars next to their name and a lot of length and a lot of athleticism. So for Auburn, it's like you did a great job of defending that in the first game. Arkansas is going to be different. Arkansas is going to change. They're going to adapt. They're going to do things differently than what they did in the first game, especially at home. And I don't think they're going to have the energy and effort problem they may have had the first time around. Like Cal said, you know, I remember after that game, Cal Perry said, well, that's not my team. I don't know what they were doing out there. We didn't look like we even, you know, wanted to be out there. Don't think they're going to have that problem at Bud Walton. So for Auburn, I think it's not only can you defend like you did in the first game, I think you're going to have to bring even more of that, and especially in terms of your strategy. I think you're just going to have to tweak it because teams have the book on you at this point. Teams know how to really attack this Auburn defense, and that's why I think Stephen Pearl has talked about how he's got to get back to the drawing board and change up some things.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And, I mean, now Auburn just needs to snap out of this. We knew, as you said, I mean, this middle six was quite the daunting task, thinking that, you know, if they could go at least 3-3, now they've got to beat Arkansas to try to even things up at 3-3. Justin, I mean, I hear some people that I guess they don't check some of the numbers, some of the folks that are constantly, you know, updating the RPI and strength of schedule and everything and projecting the NCAA tournament field. Auburn is still, I'd say, about a 90% figured by, you know, to be a 90% in the tournament. But as you said, it surely would help them if they could get a win against a team like Arkansas. They can't afford to lose one of these non-quad one ball games that they have the rest of the season. And I think if they go 9-9 in conference, don't you think that'll get them in?
Yeah, 9-9 should get them in. I think, you know, 10 you feel really good about because you'd be 10-8 and you'd pick up one more quad one win. And, yeah, here's the thing. I say this with all love and respect to Auburn fans out there because they pay my salary and, you know, I've been surrounded by them all my life. I think if you're worried about it or starting to panic or freak out or think this team's not going to make the tournament, you probably need to just keep an eye on things other than Auburn basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's easy when your team's losing to think that it's the end of the world. But it's a whole big world of college basketball here, and there's three things that are really playing to Auburn's advantage right now. One, they've played the second toughest schedule in college basketball. That's going to help them out a lot. They get a lot more leeway with a lot of teams because of what they did in non-conference play, and obviously the caliber of teams are playing in the SEC. Number two, 3 years ago when Auburn was in kind of a similar spot heading into the NCAA tournament, they were 8-9, they were 9-seed. You know, had to go to Birmingham, played Iowa, then played Houston.
Mm-hmm.
That team did not have as many quad one wins as Auburn does right now. That Florida win. That St. John's win, that first Arkansas win, those are better wins than pretty much anything Auburn had 3 seasons ago, and that team got into the tournament into the tournament. They got several seed lines off the bubble, so keep that in mind. And then number three, yes, they have an opportunity to pick up momentum down the stretch. These last six, they will have four quad two games. Auburn's got a great record against quad two. I think A&M's the only quad two loss they have at this point in the season, so that's a really, really good spot to be in. If you can stay strong in those quad two games, pick up maybe one more quad one game here in these final seven, you will be more than fine to make it to the NCAA tournament and be in a good spot. So that's the thing, though. It's like you help yourself out a lot on Saturday. If you can find a way to beat Arkansas away from home, you help yourself out a ton. If you don't, then you start talking about Mississippi State next week is, all right, you got to have it. You can't afford to trip up at this point.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you'd love to be able to put yourself in a situation where, I mean, look, you don't ever want to be in a situation where, oh, it's okay and you can lose that ball game, because it's not.
No,
ahead and take the pressure off of you by getting another one before you get to games like that, then you'd really feel pressure. And I worry, you know, if Auburn doesn't play well Saturday, and I don't know any reason why they shouldn't, really. I mean, they've been able to bounce back from losses before, although this is the first three-game slide that they've had. But, I just worry that a loss like something, like a Mississippi State, is the kind of loss that could really send you spiraling, and you wonder about the team's psyche at that point.
Absolutely. And look, if you lose Saturday to Arkansas, it's like you four-game losing streak heading into Starkville, a place where you traditionally don't do very well in. Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of a real back-against-the-wall type of situation for Auburn, even if their analytics are still good at the moment, because you don't want to let losing become a habit, right? You don't want to have a situation where, you know, you feel like you're in a rut if you're a basketball team. So, yeah, I mean, there's an opportunity to get momentum down the stretch. I thought, you know, all along, I thought this middle six was something that Auburn needed just to survive, pick up some wins in, and then hit momentum. And then, you know, what happens if Auburn heads into Nashville here in a few weeks? Winners of what, five of their last six, four out of their last seven, something like that. Then you're talking about a different team, and you're talking about a different ball game, a different situation for Auburn. So yeah, I think that's the kind of thing, is you don't want every loss, you feel like it's going to be tougher to get back up. So yeah, Saturday's a huge opportunity. It's like the last three for Auburn, you know, it's kept them from climbing seed lines. It hadn't knocked them out of the tournament yet, but you don't want to dig a hole and stay in it. Especially as you get closer to March, you want to be playing some of your best basketball.
Oh, no question about it. Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer with us here for another few minutes on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Coach Don Dunn will be joining me here in just a little while. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon and finish up our visit with Justin when we come back. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill here in the studio. Dan's got Troy women's basketball again today. He'll be back in tomorrow. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with us on the Drive hotline. And, Ferg, before we get to football, one positive thing I would think from the last couple of ball games has to be the offense from Tahad Pettiford. I mean, he didn't have it all from the outside the other night against Vandy, but his last two ball games have been two of his better offensive performances in a while.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think with Todd, it's just like, you know, shots not falling from deep from him. I mean, he had some good looks against Vandy, and they just didn't fall. He's just kind of snake-bitten there. But when he's driving downhill and creating that way, I think you see a lot of positives there. He got to the basket. He got to the free throw line a little bit more in this game. Good assist to turnover ratio these last two games. He's attacking. He's playing more. I feel like if Auburn can tap into what's made Tahad so effective these last couple of games and pair that with what you would hope would be a resurgent Keyshawn Hall after this tough outing that he had against Vanderbilt,
you've got the makings of a pretty dangerous offense, because I think these guys are doing a better job of, you know, playing these games where it's a little bit more sped up, you know, a little bit more, you know, quicker Auburn kind of attacking. You know, they've had some good late offense this season, but I thought in the second half when Auburn needed buckets and they needed to make a comeback, and you saw Tahad really kind of push the pace and really take it to that Vanderbilt defense, I thought you saw a much more effective Auburn offense. So something they could really, really use down the stretch of the season if you can keep doing that.
Yeah, no question about that. They really need that. It would be – you know, that's the other thing. Somebody mentioned yesterday, I don't know how many times we felt that, you know, you really had multiple guys on or the whole thing click, have one of those complete games. I don't know that we've seen that in a while. Auburn's had some – better games defensively while they were going through the four-game winning streak, and we've seen some offense, but I don't know that it's really still. I guess what in your mind is the best game this team has played? Maybe the first time against Arkansas.
Maybe the first time against Arkansas. That second half against Texas was probably one of the best halves ever. But you remember in that game, it was Kevin Overton and Keyshawn Hall scoring. So it's like,
yep.
I think if we could see a game where Auburn has the best of this current version of Tahad Bedford and the best of Keyshawn Hall, it could be really, really fun. Because then you still have Kevin Overton. You still have, I think Keyshawn Murphy can continue to play some good ball, you know, especially on the offensive end these last few games. You have Sway, you have Jovich, and then, you know, Elijah Freeman needs to continue to come on and play well. So, I mean, you've got a really potent offense. I mean, this is still top 15 offense in college basketball this season by the analytics. But what they need to do is they need to find a way to get, you know, what they've got out of Pettiford these last couple of games. Get that going with Keyshawn Hall a little bit more and then have those pieces around him click. It could be a pretty fun offense down the stretch. And, again, like we were saying in the last segment, like you don't want to say, like, oh, it's okay if you lose these games or all that, because Auburn will have being some pressure down the stretch. But they're going to get some quad two matchups. They're going to get some opportunities late in the season against some of these teams towards the bottom of the SEC where I think they could really get the offense clicking.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, Ferg, before we run out of time, love to get some thoughts from you. We've had the opportunity to meet all the assistant football coaches here over the last few days. Just some thoughts from some of the guys that you hadn't had a chance to meet.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a really good time. Really appreciate this kind of access that we got at this point in the year, about a month out from spring ball. And, you know, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to digest. One of the things I've been really interested in seeing is just kind of how all the little kind of connections between the staff,
the relationships.
Really
yes.
We were talking about this the other day on our podcast. It's like, we don't really like, it's hard to find. I think Larry Scott's the only guy on this staff that either hadn't coached at Auburn or coached with Alex Golish in the past or have some sort of connection. Like, so you have all these kind of, and then there's some parallels obviously with, you know, certain guys that have, or, you know, been with like a guy like Coleman Hutzler has been, you know, with DJ Durkin a ton. So, you know, you've got these pieces here where they all kind of are woven together. And I wrote about it couple months ago, and it bears repeating here. One of the things I really like about this staff is the amount of experience they have. When you go into that defensive, you know, when we go into that press that press conference area yesterday, and you look up and you see, well, there's a former SEC defensive coordinator. There's a former SEC defense coordinator.
And Brad Wilson's a former coordinator.
Yep, and you just look around. And then the day before, there's a former head coach. You know, there's a former coordinator here. And you see all these together, and it's like the experience of this staff, I think, is something that Auburn fans should be pretty excited about. I compared it, you know, this first-year staff under Alex Golish, if you add up the years of SEC and Power Conference coordinator position coach experience, it blows out of the water Hugh Freeze and Brian Harsin's first couple of for year one staffs. And in fact, it's very close in parallels to what Gus Malzahn and Gene Chizik had in their year one staff. So I think that's a pretty good sign, because I think Auburn would take definitely the 2013 season that Gus had.
Yeah, I would think.
I think you'd take the 2009 season that Chizik had. as well.
Oh, no kidding. You know, kidding.
With the kind of success they have with the new system. So you get to hear and talk to these guys, and you just such a wealth of experience. And then I think there's a really good chemistry among this group.
Yeah, I really enjoyed getting the opportunity to, you know, to hear some of them and get to meet them. Then you've got, you know, with all that experience, though, you've got a couple of young, very energetic guys with Coach Hoodie, Tyler Hodanik on offense, DeMarcus Van Dyke there over on the defensive side that are young guys that aren't very far removed from playing that look like they could still get out there and play.
They absolutely could, yeah. You know, especially DVD. I mean, he looks like another one of those dudes, like Miami DB through and through, you know, with what he's got. But, yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting group, and I think, you know, those two guys are fascinating because they have that experience with this staff. They have that, you know, continuity. They've had success in working their way up, you know, with these coaches. And, you know, it's not a perfect parallel, but you know who that reminds me of? Another guy we talked to yesterday, and Vontrell King-Williams, who was an excellent, he was a guy that he said it yesterday. He said, when they promoted me, Auburn defensive line coach was not what you thought of when you looked at my resume. But then, you know, obviously he's had really, really a lot of success these last couple seasons. So, you know, I think for Auburn, you got to continue to trust, you know, the talent evaluation. You got to trust the chemistry and finding the right culture fits with your program, and that includes the coaching staff, and I think you're seeing that with some of those young guys.
Yeah, and Vontrell has done well enough to be highly sought after. I mean, sure looked like Southern Cal was very interested in him.
I'm telling you, man, I've been really impressed, and I think we're going to see it again this season with the guys. You know, we're about to run into year three of Auburn where you're looking at the defensive line and be like, man, you know, a lot of replace. How are they gonna make it work? And then they do. I mean, they've done that now. They've done it each of the last 2 years, and I think they're going to be on pace to do that again this year. And you know, Vontrell King-Williams is excellent coach. I mean, you know, there's a reason why DJ Durkin went to bat for him so hard to make sure that, you know, he was a guy that stayed on his staff.
Yeah, and no question about it. Looking forward to all the info that you put out, which is just voluminous. I don't know that I've ever used voluminous on in my years on the air. So, but I mean, that is absolutely appropriate to what Justin does. I mean, he really puts it out, let everybody know what you've got coming up, and then how, of course, if they don't have the Auburn Observer, they can get it.
Yeah, this was a good day. I mean, today we had, I took my notes from all those position coach interviews that we had, and I picked out 15 players that stood out to me from what we've heard from the other guys. So you can check that out. I also had a podcast today talking some basketball and a little bit of football as well for our subscribers. Tomorrow is a lot of fun. We were talking about Todd Pettiford and his offense. Our friend Henry Patton's got a really interesting story diving into the numbers of Todd Pettiford. That you want to check out tomorrow. Also got a podcast coming out tomorrow, just in time, opening day for Auburn baseball. We don't cover Auburn baseball on a day-to-day basis, but our pal Adam Cole does in the Montgomery Advertiser. He came in to do a full season preview for Auburn baseball. That'll come out tomorrow as well. I'll be heading to Fayetteville this weekend, have plenty of coverage from Auburn versus Arkansas. So if you want all that, auburnobserver.com, sign up there, $6 a month or $60 a year. Everything we do gets emailed to your inbox. And like I said, you'll get two things tomorrow morning, get plenty of stuff this weekend about the basketball game as well. So sign up.
Yeah, never short on material. I mean, it is amazing. You do a great job, Ferg. Really appreciate it. Thanks for being on. Have a great trip to Fayetteville and back.
Yep, absolutely. Appreciate y'all.
All right, take care. Justin Ferguson joining us for the first couple of segments. Just in time. In walks the Coach yeah. Don Dunn, now joining me here in the studio. Don, how you doing?
Good. Busy day.
What a beautiful day.
Oh, man. It's annual butt for the Auburn track. So I've been.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've got 58 butts
wow.
over there. And I'll be going
big
in
fundraiser,
early tonight.
Obviously,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they're picking them up tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Oh, that's good. Well,
yeah,
again,
it's great. Yeah, at least I'm not freezing.
You're
out
not
there.
Kidding. It has been beautiful today. So great to have you in. We'll check in with David Paschal in hour number two. We've also got some audio. We've got tons of audio from football coaches over the last couple of days. Don, we had a chance to meet the whole staff.
Good.
And we want to play some of that today. Spend a little time with Butch Thompson, his opening day starter, Jake Marciano, and the veteran of the team and one of the team captains, Lucas Steele. If we get a chance, we'll play that sometime before the first pitch tomorrow afternoon at 5:30. But we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday edition of the drive. Don hadn't had a chance to talk with you in the last few days. Tough one for Auburn basketball the other night.
Yeah, I tell you, Vanderbilt, when they get going, they're good. You know, I watched them beat the dog out of Kentucky, and they just got a jump on us the other night. We never really could catch up.
No, I mean, Auburn led, I guess, one time for like 20 seconds. Yeah. That was it in the whole game.
Yeah, and we just didn't seem like we had the energy that we've normally had, but those things happen. Bounce back this week against a good Arkansas team. Going to be a tough one on the road at Arkansas.
Oh, it is. Cal was, more than a little disappointed when Auburn just
that's the worst beating
throttled
I've seen,
them.
I've
yes.
seen Arkansas take in a long time. And, that'll be a tough one. They're all going to be tough now. It's getting down to the nitty-gritty. You got to take care of your home court, and that's what was disappointing, even though Vanderbilt's a great team and having a great season. And I think, you know, they're gonna upset some people down the road if they, you know, get a good draws in the NCAA. Because that one kid is really special, the little guard.
Oh, man. Yeah. Tanner? Yeah, he is really, really good.
Not a highly recruited kid. Isn't that amazing from right down the road?
He's one of the best guards that we've seen all year.
Seems like a great kid, like personality, mm-hmm. and just loves playing basketball. Yeah, that was a tough one. Got to go out there and take care of business Saturday. And baseball starts tomorrow. It's just crazy.
It is a fun time. There's so much going on. Getting to meet.
Won't be long for spring ball.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And we got a chance to meet the assistants over the last couple of days. It was defensive assistants yesterday after the offensive assistants on Tuesday. And, you know, one of the positions that that there's a lot of, you know, concern about on the defensive side, it's pass rusher, the edge. And Auburn, you know, we talked about this. Justin was mentioning it too. You look there on that defensive staff, and you've got two guys who were SEC defensive coordinators last year as assistants for DJ Durkin. One of them, one of them is Tim Banks, who's the safeties coach, came from Tennessee.
Right.
Coleman Hutzler was the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State last year. This will be the fifth time he has been with DJ Durkin.
Really?
They were together at Stanford, at Florida twice, and at Ole Miss, and now at Auburn.
I didn't know.
So
that.
I mean, he has a very good relationship.
He knows him
with DJ Durkin, and we had a chance to talk with him about the guys, what he has seen early on, and him making that transition to Auburn.
Peter, hey Peter, Coleman,
you can sit down, Peter. Back and forth at different places.
So, starting out, what do you think about your group so far? I know it's just been a couple of months, I guess.
Yeah, excited. You know, it's fun in the month of February to get back on campus. You get hired and you immediately hit the road recruiting. And so it's been awesome this past week or so to get back around the guys. And excited about the group, with Jared and Joe and JJ as the returning guys, and then adding, you know, Nate and Deshaun Womack. I think we got a great combination of talent and you know, some guys with some versatility. That's really been the biggest word that comes to mind.
Now, am I right? This is the fourth time you and DJ have worked together different places?
Gosh, yeah. 2007 was a long time ago. That was the first time we got connected. That was Stanford to Florida. Florida left and came back again. So if you count Florida twice, I guess, and then Ole Miss in 2021. So
did DJ have hair back then?
He did. It's funny. My daughter, when she came to the facility for the first time, saw the picture. I was like, Dad, look how bald Coach Durkin is. I said, I remind him every day, don't worry.
That's good.
Yeah. Keep
things fresh.
No doubt.
You mentioned Sean Blumenauer. How important was it for you guys to bring in someone who's got as much experience in the SEC as he does?
Yeah, it's a huge addition. You know, a guy that understands the league, right, and understands the level of, you know, competition. And Nate's the same way, you know, coming from Missouri last year. And so, you know, anytime you can add a guy like that who gets it and knows what it takes to compete at this level is a great addition.
They talk a little about the young guys. Jarius Smith specifically, I mean, you haven't been around him long, but, you know, he's a five-star coming out of high school. What is it about him that, you know, gives him so much potential?
Yeah, Jared's got a ton of potential. He's got a great combination of size, right, and length, along with the skill set, the athleticism, the coordination. I was giving him crap the other day about, you know, how do you not trip over yourself with a size 18 shoe, whatever the hell he's got, you know, on his feet? But, you know, excited about his potential and got to have a great offseason and great spring ball and going forward to be ready for the season.
Do you have any idea yet? Do you like it 5-tech? Do you like it edge? Any idea on that yet, or is it just get him out there?
No, and that's kind of the fun part, right, is really we've got some guys in the room that can play both. And so training guys to you know, learn both, challenging guys to learn both has been big. Here as we start to do some of the football stuff, and we'll put the pads on and figure out what guys might do the best. But I tell them all the time, you create value for yourself in that if I can go to Coach Durkin and say, hey, so-and-so can play both, man, that checks a lot of boxes and creates a lot of value for you as an individual, but also for Dirk as the play caller.
DJ was talking about some other guys that you guys may take a look at, the linebackers. Have you talked to DJ, Brad, anything about some of those guys that you might take a look at?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to evaluate through the month of February as we get into these workouts. And, you know, that linebacker room is loaded with a ton of talent, right? And so you're always looking for ways to get your best 11 on the field. And if somebody from that room can do that, you know, skill set wise, then be happy to, you know, coach them and help them. So we'll see kind of through February and then, you know, into spring ball if there's anybody like that.
Nate Johnson didn't have a whole bunch of playing time last year, but you obviously saw something. And what was that you saw?
Yeah, Nate's a guy that, you know, has great frame, great length, and a great skill set. If you look back to his Appalachian State film, you know, played a lot of really good ball, right? I think got in a situation at Missouri where he was behind some guys, and, you know, that happens. But excited about what Nate brings to the room, mature, you know, a guy that's seen it, been through it, and knows that his window of opportunity really is shrinking, and that creates a lot of urgency and a lot of, you know, work ethic.
Are you seeing that with him so far in the work ethic?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, he brings a great presence to the room and, you know, on the field as well. So excited to continue to see him progress.
Have you seen anybody stepping up as a leader in that room so far? I know you're losing Falk. Older Falk.
Right, Keldrick. Yeah, I mean, you know, ton of talent, ton of production, ton of leadership that was, you know, in the group last year that's no longer here. And so I think it's early. I think it's one of those things where guys need to take that opportunity to you know, grow in that role. You know, I challenge them that you got to make sure that you're taking care of your business before you're trying to lead others, right? But always going to continue to push guys to grow as, you know, as leaders. And Coach Golish says it all the time, man, it's got to be player-driven, right? If it's just coach-driven, we're going to reach a certain limit. You know, it's a hard position to find because it's a great combination. You know, some people think edge and they think, you know, an apex inside back or something like that. No, it's a guy that's really a hybrid defensive end right? Hey, that can set edges in the SEC. So you got to have the length, right? But also, you know, affecting the quarterback, pass rushing, the ability to drop some, play in space, right? We're going to do a lot with that guy. And so it's the ultimate combo player and combo athlete.
How would you kind of describe yourself as a recruiter?
I don't know. I don't think there's a recruiting version of me versus another, right? I try and, you know, been doing it long enough where, you know, you're really looking to build those relationships, looking to be genuine. I tell guys all the time, what you see is what you get. And, you know, coming to a spring practice, watching us do what we do, you know, that's a great evaluation of, you know, what kind of coach I am and you know, the things that you're going to get as a player in my room.
That is Coleman Hutzler, the former Mississippi State defensive coordinator, who is now the edge and defensive ends coach for Alex Golish and DJ Durkin.
Yeah, sounds good. He's got a lot of experience, and like you said, he's been with DJ, and that always helps. Familiarity, how the coordinator wants things done, and that, you know, they'll be able to communicate and, you know, have some disagreements and have some good stuff come out.
I mean, like Justin was saying, it's amazing, and you know this. I mean, you build relationships through the years. You know a lot of coaches, even though you may not have coached with them.
Right.
You get to know some of them, but these guys have connections, and you know, obviously that was a tremendous one there with Coleman and DJ. But you know, Tim Banks was with Alex Golish at Tennessee. The guys that have been together at some time, so they sort of know what to expect from those guys.
To me, that's better if you've been on a staff with somebody and worked with them. I mean, it's different. Yeah, you have acquaintances. You know, I might know a guy at Mississippi State, but I don't know how he is when the bullets start flying. And when we got to make a decision, when we evaluate a player, when we want to put a new scheme in or run a drill, they know each other and they know what to expect, and especially when you work for the guy who's the head coach. That's plus.
So, we'll let you hear more of some of the coaches that we had a chance to talk to. Just thought that was an interesting one that would fit into that time that we had. Right now, it's time for us to get to our final break of hour number one. Still plenty of time. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. It's Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. Before we get back to the show, back into it, and we'd love to hear from you as well, want to let you know, I've been going to Game Day Men's Health here in Auburn for a few months. And when I first went in, there's no question, I was feeling just tired, run down, just really dragging, and went in and was really impressed. I met Chad and Aaron and Kelly and Courtney, all the great folks there. But they interviewed me. We did a complete medical background. They did blood work and gave me some suggestions. And look, I'm feeling better. It's great to not, you know, be feeling just so run down and tired. But I mean, they've got expert treatments for low T, weight loss. I've dropped a few pounds. Still got more to go. Vitamin injections, ED. They can handle any of those situations for you guys. I mean, you'll really feel much better and about yourself and for yourself if you go see Game Day Men's Health. They're on Moores Mill Road before you get out to Ogletree, and they're open till 5 o'clock each afternoon, open 8 to 5, and you can give them a call, 334-209-3706. Game Day Men's Health, now here in Auburn. All right, we've got just a little time left here in hour number one, and Don, as we said, I mean, there's a lot we can talk about.
Everything.
I mean, I'm excited about the start of baseball.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that some more. But we've got We've got our buddy David Pascal going to be joining us here at the, you know, after we get into the second hour. He's just wrapping up his show in Chattanooga. We'll get his thoughts on college athletics. The Trinidad Chambliss, we're awaiting word from the judge in Oxford on Trinidad Chambliss. Please, come on. Let's have some sense, as the NCAA said, about the deal with Charles Bediako the other day.
For sure.
We'll see what happens there and more. So that's coming up. And your calls in hour number two of the Thursday Drive. So stick with us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio on a beautiful Thursday afternoon.
Yeah.
Boy, you'd love to have the rest of the weekend, you know, have the weekend look the way it does right now. And it looks pretty good for tomorrow. And Saturday, I believe the rain, it looks like the rain has now been sort of pushed back from Saturday. Not as much of a chance, just more cloudy on Saturday. But still going to be pretty comfortable temperatures in the upper 60s.
Yeah, 68 tomorrow, 67 Saturday, 63 maybe.
Yeah, Sunday. Sunday is the best is the chance of rain.
Only 4% Saturday.
Yeah, so that's good. So and right now softball's going on.
Yeah,
Auburn softball with their home debut, home opener. Well, it's just about to get underway. Auburn and Illinois, then Auburn and Youngstown State, and baseball starting tomorrow. And if we get a chance in a little while, we'll let you hear. Okay, yeah, in a little while, if we get a chance, we'll let you hear the opening night starter for the Tigers, Jake Marciano, young lefty transfer who has come in from Virginia Tech, and he is that long, lanky lefty.
Yeah.
He walked in. I mean, he's one of those guys, if he turns sideways, you might not see him.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a slim lefty, but Butch Thompson has really been impressed with the left-hander. His ability to throw strikes, and he talked about it. He said, that's my game, because he was asked, does it put more pressure on him knowing that the coach says, my starters, the guys that are going to be starting for us are the guys that throw the most strikes? And he said, not really. That's my game. That's what I do.
I throw strikes.
He said, I've learned that the more strikes you throw, the more outs you're going to get. And the thing is, they're going to swing at strikes.
Yeah.
And if they hit them, you know, just hope – you're throwing it where they don't hit them hard.
Right.
But, I mean, that's
how tall you think he is?
He's 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah.
But, I mean,
you know how those
he looks,
tall
he looks even taller.
Yeah. Coming off that mound,
because
that's
because he's so thin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, looking forward to that tomorrow night. And then we also talked with – he came in along with Lucas Steele, who is back for another year and a guy that really – worked his way into the lineup and became a big threat for the Tigers down the stretch and into the postseason. And he's one of the leaders, and he welcomes that, being a leader. And so we talked to those two guys. A little later on, we'll let you hear some of their comments as we get ready for opening night tomorrow at the ballpark.
Hard to believe.
Yeah,
already here.
It is a fun time right now. I mean, the weather's nice.
Yep.
We've got softball and baseball going. We talked with the football assistants over the last couple of days. And then, of course, we're coming down the stretch in college basketball. Yep. Auburn looking to snap a three-game slide with quite the challenge coming up tomorrow, Saturday night in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah.
A team that Auburn handled with ease, and you could tell, I mean – Cal was just beside himself. It's like,
that's not my team. We couldn't beat them if we played
them. Yeah, he said, that's not my team. But you know they will be ready for the Tigers on Saturday evening. So that one's the next on tap for the Tigers. We're going to head to the Drive hotline right now. Welcome in our regular Thursday afternoon guest, just wrapping up his show a few minutes ago on WGOW. There in Chattanooga, and longtime writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press. That's our good friend David Pascal now joining us here on the Thursday Drive. Hey, David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Hope y'all are doing great. You know, Chattanooga claims Don Dunn, so
yeah,
I hope y'all are doing well.
That's right. That's right, buddy.
we're doing fine, David. I mean, waiting for another judge to make an announcement. At least when I checked a couple of minutes ago, still no word out of Oxford on the judge hearing Trinidad Chambliss's folks' arguments to try to grant a temporary and permanent injunction against the NCAA to allow him a sixth year of eligibility.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, of course, Joey Aguilar is up tomorrow, and you know, we'll find out his situation. But yeah, a lot of courtroom scenes in SEC athletics as we speak. But you know, I don't know all the I was trying to follow that today, but you know, I'm listening to you talk about the baseball. Of course, Tennessee's excited about their baseball there. Lindsey Nelson Stadium's been expanded with all the success they've had under Tony Vitello, so that seats more than 8,000 now. You know, the basketball team won in Starkville last night, and, of course, with this football. But, yeah, the Ole Miss stuff I was trying to figure out because Joe Judge was there, you know, talking about how players, you know, with pregnant partners, they need to sleep in different rooms because the players need good night sleeps and the women need to take care of the feeding. And I was like, wait
What's
a minute.
What's that
how
have
did it
to
go
do?
From,
yeah, I saw that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, how did we go from eligibility to that? And so that's just one of those where, and of course, you know, and y'all may know more about the landscape than I do, but apparently this town that court's in, Pittsboro, Mississippi, I mean, it's like a town of 300 people or something. I mean, it's just teeny, so this has to be the biggest thing that's gone on there in quite some time.
Maybe the biggest thing that's ever gone on there.
Yeah, I recruited Mississippi. I've never heard of that place.
Wow.
I had to look it up.
Where is it?
I had to look it up, too.
Is it somewhere near Oxford?
I could tell you a part of the state. I don't know what it's close to. I just saw where it's the census is about 300 people.
Wow.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd seen a couple of things during that. I saw the Joe Judge comments, not the judge,
right?
In Oxford's comments, and then I saw some of the remarks from Trinidad Chambliss's folks, and Trinidad Chambliss testifying he had tonsillitis so bad that he couldn't do anything. He was too weak to do anything, and he felt like his coaches had promised him he was going to get an extra year of eligibility. Well, that was 5 years ago. How long does he think it takes for them to check on that?
Oh, boy.
And did you also hear that apparently at one point today, one of the attorneys was talking so fast that the stenographer asked if they could, you know, the judge asked if they could slow down for the stenographer. And so at one point, the attorney to just kind of stall had to ask Joe Judge what it was like coaching Tom Brady.
Oh, man.
You know, it sounds like
we're in Mayberry or something.
Yeah.
We're watching
we're watching
an episode of The Andy Show.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's
well, that's what, you know, that's sort of what the NCAA situation has become, a comedy over the last few years. Anyway, although they did get a big win on Monday from the judge in Tuscaloosa in the Charles Bediako case.
They did, and of course we talked even the last week or 2 weeks ago about, you know, it's interesting with all these things going on, you know, with Ole Miss and Clemson, with Bediako, and just how absent, you know, Sankey had been, and of course Sankey comes out speaking against, you know,
right,
Bediako's eligibility, hoping, and of course, you know, they act on that, and Charlie Baker called it a, you know, I guess he called it like a one-round win. We won this round or whatever the case was. But, you know,
praising the common sense of the judge.
Exactly. And, you know, but then it you do have, you know, the way the SEC's kind of shaped up in basketball, you've got like six teams that are pretty much locks. And you've got five teams that have no chance. And so that kind of leaves that middle five that you could argue that kind of Auburn, because of what they did in the non-conference, you know, the best thing about Auburn, even though they're scuffling, is NC State. And I know NC State got clobbered by Louisville the other night, but the fact that NC State's doing so well in the ACC
and the fact
St. John's is doing so well, and then you couple that with what Auburn did against Arkansas the first time around, and then the biggest one of all, winning in Gainesville, you know, that resume looks pretty good. If Auburn could just be 9-9, I don't think there'll be any question about it. and what they've done in the first half of their league schedule seems a little bit tougher than what they've still got to go. But, you know, Texas A&M is one of those that even though they raced out and led the league for a while, they still have more work to do. But
yes,
with
do.
Auburn and Texas A&M, those are the two teams the committee's going to have to look at and say, well, wait a minute, they did lose to Bama when they had Betty Ocko, so how do they treat those losses?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Auburn, I think Auburn, even though, I mean, their record isn't pretty, I mean, they've got the worst record of those teams you're talking about at 14-10. Texas A&M's now a quad two loss. That's one thing. I mean, A&M's continued losses have dropped them down. But if Auburn can avoid losing to those quad two teams that they have and pick up another quad one win, yeah, I think 9-9, even though that only gives them 18 regular season wins, I think they're probably still in. I think they're in pretty good shape if they can get to 9 conference wins. And then if they pick up a win in the SEC tournament, I think they're definitely in. But, I mean, they sure can't take anything for granted. And look, Arkansas is going to be extremely difficult, but what they can't afford to do is lose something like, you know, to Mississippi State or Oklahoma or LSU coming down the stretch.
Exactly. And it's funny because that's where Tennessee, I'll be up in Knoxville Saturday night when they're playing LSU. They won in Starkville. So this is Tennessee's stretch where you've got to, you know, it's understood. You've just got to make hay.
Yep.
and take care of business. And so they won last night. They should wallop LSU. And then they've got Oklahoma. And you win those three games, and all of a sudden a 6-4 league record becomes 9-4, and you're set. I mean, I think Tennessee's set anyway. But,
yes.
Yeah, I think if Auburn – and, you know, it's, you know, what we're seeing now is really interesting as far as some of these crowds. And, you know, Auburn has always had to market its basketball to the Auburn community, just like Georgia has always had to market its basketball to Athens.
Right.
Nobody is going to leave Atlanta at 5:45 or 6 and try to make it to a 7 o'clock tip in Athens with that traffic. You just can't do it. So you really have to market those weeknight games to those communities. And, boy, you're starting to see some of them. LSU, LSU, Baton Rouge is a sizable city. But the LSU crowd 2 nights ago for the Arkansas game and the Mississippi State crowd last night for the Tennessee game were just woeful. And you're starting to see that now. There was the Syracuse crowd last night. And, of course, that's where it's really bad because
no
the Carrier Dome seats 30,000. So
you're just seeing a lot
of this with the ticket prices and everything like that. You're seeing fans start to bail on some of these things.
Well, I mean, and it's something that gets harder and harder. You mentioned the ticket prices. It's harder and harder for fans to justify, you know, spending that and going out. And you have so many games that are later now than you used to. I mean, that's the other thing. It's difficult if you have kids or if you have a job to be thinking about, you know, going and staying out till, 10:30 or later when the game's getting over then, not even counting what time you're getting home.
Yeah, Don knows this. I mean, being in Chattanooga, I could literally, where I am driving with y'all, I can drive 5 minutes from now and be in Central Time Zone.
Yeah.
But Tennessee is, with Knoxville, is Eastern Time Zone.
Right.
And one third of Tennessee's basketball games this year tip off either at 8:30 or 9.
That's terrible.
And you're right. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's for TV. It's definitely not for the fans, but look, that's the way it is in all sports these days.
Yeah, and I mean, I really do think the SEC has a good – I mean, that's one of the things that I think has really enhanced SEC basketball is just the television package.
Sure.
The fact that you can watch everybody. I mean, there are so few games once league play begins, and really the only games I've seen recently that weren't on the SEC network was when you had the inclement weather a week or two ago where they just had to move some games up and put them on SEC Network Plus just because there was already games in that time slot on the regular SEC network.
Now, you're right, and don't think it hasn't been beneficial because the numbers, it was just last week, wasn't it? I guess it's since the last time we spoke. The distribution to the league's teams is just – it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's more – each team – I thought about this, David. Each team is getting more now than the entire league got back when Media Days started back in, was it 90 or 92?
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in the day, we marveled when the SEC split up $200 million. This year, they had a $200 million jump.
Yes.
From last year. So, I mean, yeah, the numbers are – and I saw today where Will Muschamp at Texas is going to make $2.8 a year for 3 years. That's his deal at Texas to be defensive coordinator. I mean, that's more than Don made at Auburn, $2.8 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That shows that, time away from being a full-time assistant didn't hurt Will at all.
Yeah.
No, and he had a unique deal with he and his wife Carol because Whit, his second son, played up here at Baylor School,
right,
and is now at Vanderbilt. But yeah, he and his wife Carol liked Chattanooga so much that they got an apartment here. And so I saw Will Muschamp on the sidelines of a Baylor School football game here about 3 months ago, and then the next thing you know, he's at Texas making $2.8 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, Don's just shaking his head. So.
Well, I will say this about Don, though. Don had that deal thrown in about the barbecue.
Yeah,
up to 2.8.
There's some perks.
That's value. That's right. You've got to put certain values on different
right.
things. No question.
I didn't get
about
a dealer car. I got dealer barbecue.
That's great stuff. David, it's always great spending a little bit of time with you. What's been the hot topic up there in Chattanooga?
Nothing too urgent. It's probably like Auburn. I don't know how much y'all show talked about the Super Bowl. I mean, when you have teams like the Patriots and Seahawks, that's not exactly a deep South
no,
deal. But,
no, it's not.
I thoroughly, it's interesting because I've always been college football first and college basketball was 1A. And being at Auburn, my freshman year was 85, 86, and in 85, Auburn was the preseason number one, and the football season didn't really work out the way Auburn wanted. That was the Van Tiffin kick, and that was loss to Texas A&M in the Cotton Bowl, but that was also a basketball season in 86 where Auburn went to the Elite Eight. So I've always loved college football and college basketball. My love for college basketball really continues, which is why, the NBA I don't even watch. But I just love college basketball, and I think this is a great race. I mean, I think, Florida, has certainly got its act together and looks like it's going to be the team to beat, but there are just going to be so many good games down the stretch to determine kind of some of that pecking order. And you mentioned baseball. I mean, we didn't even cover Tennessee baseball 10 years ago.
Oh, no.
And so, I started covering that, Vitello's second or third season when they started getting really good, and then the next thing you know, I'm out in Omaha watching them win a national championship. So I love watching, and I Major League Baseball with the Braves or the I'm a Dodgers guy, but that's I just kind of have that on in the background. I mean, but I really love college baseball, and I really love college basketball compared to their professional sports.
Hey, college baseball, I've said this for years, and I think it's even more so the case now. I mean, it's a good Double-A baseball, SEC baseball especially, is what it feels like. These guys, the best players, are ready to be more than competitive in Double-A ball when they come out, and it's tremendous watching this conference baseball. And you see teams that struggle along in this conference, they can play with anybody, they can beat anybody. We say it in every sport, but I think in baseball there's no question that we are the cream of the crop.
Yeah, and it's funny because if I had a regret about Auburn in the sports, because I went to all the football games, I went to all the home basketball games and some on the road as well, but I probably only went to Plainsman Park 3 or 4 times. And definitely should have gone more. Tennessee had a football game this past season at Mississippi State, and I like to get to these games early, and they had a little scrimmage at Duty Noble Field. And, I mean, that stadium is beautiful.
Oh, fabulous.
And the facility at Arkansas, Arkansas, that's beautiful too. These facilities, like you said, I mean, they're just gorgeous. And really, Chattanooga is about to open a new stadium for the Lookouts, and one of the reasons, I mean, and part of it is because that was a part of it. They're like, these SEC stadiums are kicking the butt out of some of these minor league stadiums.
Right.
And so they've got to make these minor league stadiums nicer, or else they're going to, you know, they're going to lose play or lose, you know, franchises are going to take teams out of towns, and I mean, because they're so used to having the amenities that the SEC provides that when they come to a Chattanooga, they're like, this is crap to what we had in Auburn or Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, well, it is. Let me tell you how much it's changed, though. I was doing the play-by-play back in those days when you first started in school. And, yeah, we were going around, and there was an awful lot of, you know, wooden bleachers and still some chicken wire fences and things back there in the day. So it is amazing the transformation that has been made and the just the emphasis that there has been placed on, you know, winning in multiple sports and especially in baseball. When you see the facilities that everybody has these days, it's just tremendous.
You know, and the other thing about just the power of the SEC is, you know, one of the biggest stories in SEC baseball is going back to Mississippi State with Brian O'Connor.
Right.
You know, he had been at Virginia, won a national championship with the Cavaliers, and there's a lot of excitement right now with Mississippi State because that's obviously a program that cares a ton about baseball. But if you look at their 10 SEC series, eight of them are against teams in the preseason top 16 or 17. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, that's the way it is in the SEC because I think there. Last time I looked, I think there were 11 or 12 teams in it was either Baseball America or D1 Baseball's poll. So I mean, that's the way it is in this league. You're going to be playing. You're going to be playing a ranked team just about every week, and that gives you an opportunity. You know, if you don't just get ground up, it gives you an opportunity to really, you know, make a mark. So it's going to be fun. Yeah, I can't wait for it starting tomorrow night. David, always
not everybody can play Missouri every weekend.
No, you're right about that. David, it's always great to spend a little bit of time with you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you've got going there in Chattanooga.
TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 Central each weekday.
Outstanding. Thanks again, David. Have a great weekend.
Bill and Don, always enjoy visiting. Hope y'all have a great weekend, too.
You too. Thanks, buddy.
All right, we will get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in. We'll open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this. There it is. Welcome back into the drive. I've never seen the luge relay is going on now. I didn't know they did relays in the luge. I've thought of some crazy things that there could be in the Olympics before. I had not thought of this one. At least they don't have to touch, I don't think, the next person. They're not handing off a skate or something like that. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the drive hotline. And I doubt Mitch is going to, you know, get us out of the craziness. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Coach, you said you're cooking 58 butts tonight?
Yeah, we're doing every year Larry from Countries helps out the Auburn track team. And they sell Boston butts.
For fun, yeah, as a fundraiser.
As a fundraiser. So we're doing 50. Okay. I got 50 going out tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. No, I'm sorry, 8:30. But we had to put on, you know, stuff for the store still. So we probably got on 60, 65 right now.
Wow.
So I'll be going over and babysitting them after the show.
You guys must have a really big pit.
Yeah, it's a nice smoker. It's a three-level smoker. It's awesome.
Okay. Is it kind of like a rotisserie?
No, sir. We don't have the rotisserie. I like those, but ours does not rotate. It's just got the three long racks. If you pack them in, I was telling Bill, you can get 9 rows of 3 deep big Boston butts on each level. And it has a wood box to the side, and it's you know, it's controlled. The damper opens and closes however you set your temperature. It's electric.
Okay, so you're not throwing logs in the firebox.
Oh yes, yes. The only thing that's electric
is the damper.
Is the damper and the thermostat.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to keep the wood in it. Yeah, I put the wood in it. Yes.
Okay, so you're not doing like some of the places in North Carolina where they actually burn coals and have to use a shovel.
No, I've seen that, and that's a good method. That's a lot more for the hogs, I believe. You know, the whole hogs.
Right.
They don't want a real flamey fire, if that makes any sense. They want more of the hot coals.
Okay, well, hey.
I'm getting hungry now, Mitch.
Right. Well, I know Dan's not there, and he's kind of the NASCAR fan
between
you guys. But NASCAR, I guess, officially starts tonight with the Daytona Duels.
Oh, that's right, Daytona 500.
Man, it is that time, isn't it? Where there is
another
so
thing
much,
we had
yeah, so much
about.
Going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's on FS1, starts at 6. And I don't think they've changed it. I think they at Daytona they still do it where. They do qualifying, and the top two qualifiers are locked in, and then everybody else is split up amongst the duels.
Yeah, I know that's the way they used to.
Yeah, so I haven't heard that they changed it. So, but yeah, that's on FS1. And I always remember this weekend because when I was on active duty, the Army always had a 4-day weekend for President's Day. We got Friday off and Monday off, and it was right around Daytona. And back in 2008, the wife and I actually went to the 50th
running
of the Daytona 500. So I don't know if we'll make the 75th. That'll be what? I don't know. That'd be 2033. We might.
Yeah, that's only 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot can happen in 7 years.
Oh, I know. But that's a whole lot better than when you're thinking, 25.
That's true. So. But, that's really all I had. I wanted to check in with Coach because I heard all those Boston butts he was cooking. And yeah, Daytona starts tonight. I think there'll be a truck race tomorrow. What I used to call the Xfinity, I think it's the Xfinity, is Saturday. And then Sunday is the big race. So, got a whole weekend of racing. I'm sure Spectre will be watching. I don't know about Dan, but. That's all I got, guys.
All right, enjoy it, Mitch. Good hearing from you.
Thank you.
334-321-1390. Before we get to our bottom of the hour break, here's some news. Probably it would put a smile on your face, Don. Auburn picking up a football commitment today from the number one prospect in the state of Alabama, the number two ranked defensive lineman in the country, and Donovan Moore out of Hueytown.
Great.
6'4", 280, defensive lineman. Picked Auburn over Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Florida State, and Texas.
Huge.
Yes.
That's high cotton, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we were talking about Vontrell King Williams a while ago.
Yep.
The job he has done and how he is being pursued. You know, Southern Cal was really interested in him.
Yep.
He is a personable guy as you're going to meet, but he is a heck of a D-line coach.
Yep.
And his young players
really like him.
That
is huge.
Yeah. So that, I mean.
And that's not been an Auburn town.
No, you're right about that.
I mean, that's great. Great, great, great.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. When we get a chance, we'll let you hear from tomorrow night's starting pitcher, the opening night starter for the Tigers, and one of their team captains who spent a little time with the media earlier today. But, again, we'd love for you to join in. Phone lines are still open, 334-321-1390, as we get to our bottom of the hour break.
502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Drew is at the controls, and let's get back to the Drive hotline. And Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre, your ears burning? Did you hear Mitch mention your name?
I sure did. All right. I wanted to take on Mitch for that. So I was planning on calling tomorrow, but I realized Dan ain't going to be there, right?
Dan will be here tomorrow. He's just got a game in Troy this
tonight,
evening, so he'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to call tomorrow and let him know about NASCAR, but since Mitch called in, You know, I believe Mitch, me, and Dan are about are the three amigos in NASCAR.
Yeah. As far as our show, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I was going to give him a rundown. Mitch did a bit of a rundown. You know, there's actually two race teams that are actually battling for a championship year in, year out for the last couple of years, and that's Joe Gibbs Racing mm-hmm. and Sports. And I believe those same two teams are going to be battling it out again between Danny Hamlin and Larson and that kid from North Georgia. His daddy was a big time racer. Dawsonville, Georgia.
Oh, God. Awesome, Bill from Dawsonville. Bill, yeah, Bill Elliott.
Chris Thank Elliott. You.
I can pull one out of the past or something every once in a while. That's about all I can do there.
Yeah, there's so many names in NASCAR now, I can't keep them all. But, yeah, tonight's races are going to be the qualifying races to see who races in Daytona, like Mitch was talking about. And, it kicks it off, buddy. It kicks off a long season.
Excuse me.
So, Dan's man, Ken Kanzowski, I guess that's his name, Kowski, broke his leg. And it just now got cleared to race again. So
wow,
yeah. So you know they've changed a lot of things. How do you know there was something about NASCAR I did not know? And during qualifying in the past, guys used to put their hand out the window to deflect the wind. And sometimes, it depending on how you put your hand, it would make your car go about a tenth of a second faster.
Oh, is that right? NASCAR,
this year NASCAR. took that away from these drivers and said that you can no longer put your hand out the window when you're qualifying.
Yeah, I guess if you put it out and your elbow was closer and your hand was in, it would create a little suction that would be a little less draft as you're going. Of course, you wouldn't want to put your palm out flat. That'd be pretty stupid. That'd slow you down.
Well somebody thought they would get away with it.
Yeah.
Grayson tried to get away with it, and they caught him doing it.
Always, you got to always be trying to come up with whatever is going to make your car go just, it doesn't matter, a tiny fraction faster, because that could be the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised we don't have as many NASCAR fans around here as we got with Talladega being up as close as it is.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, years ago when I was younger, there were a lot more folks that it felt like that were NASCAR fans.
Yes.
When I first got started in sports talk radio back over in Montgomery, Jim and I would have a lot of people talking about it. But I wonder, it doesn't seem like it just doesn't seem like it's as popular to the generation coming up as it was, you know, a few decades ago. Am I wrong there, Spector?
No, you're right. You know, NASCAR lost a lot of fans during this cancel culture thing that was going on for the last 3 or 4 years. And when they got into people's lives, the way they loved NASCAR, when you told them they couldn't do this and do that, NASCAR actually lost a lot of money doing that. But, the way the people go to races and enjoy the race and everything, they weren't hurting anybody. It wouldn't hurt anybody at all. That's their culture. That's the way they grew up.
It's one of the wildest parties I've ever been to. Let me tell you that.
That's right. But you got a lot of diehards out there that still won't show up.
Yeah. No question. Yeah.
Anyway, guys, that's it. I'll try to call Dan tomorrow then.
Sounds good, Spector. All right. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So I was listening to Spector talk about how to just change the aerodynamics,
right,
and get more speed, and that triggers this thing I just heard about on the downhill giant slalom, ski jump. So you know you're trying to fly through the air,
and
get as much distance as possible, and they found out in wind tunnel tests that what the skiers are doing, they're doing some kind of thing where they increase their surface area so they can fly farther.
Well, we sort of hinted at that last week. I'm not going to get into all the details of some of the allegations that are going on now. But let's put it this way. Your pants can become a parachute. Like a sail that will increase the lift. No, I mean, you think about it. When you're flying through the air, it's like, you know, it's like a frog when it jumps and spreads, you know, and spreads out, and it's got that extra surface area. And it helps carry him in the wind.
In the wind tunnel test, they showed where just more like a square inch or something.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That would create another 10 yards or so.
Yeah, I will leave it to our listeners to look up the details on some of the things that have been going on with that, because this is a PG show.
Oh, there's another story. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, there is. If you haven't read it, Yellowhammer, you definitely need to.
Oh, I know all about it.
Okay.
I was trying to phrase things in terms of square inch.
Okay.
That's funny.
Anyway, that's all I got.
That's
plenty.
That's enough.
that's definitely enough of that. All right, great stuff. Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. Yeah.
What was it? Last Friday.
It was last Friday. Oh. I saw the story. you never know what's going on. Mm. I mean, who's trying to do what to gain any kind of advantage?
To get an advantage.
Yep, yeah. That's absolutely right.
Your hand out the window and
flying through the air. That's right. 334-321-1390. Oh, I got so distracted there. I was going to run the audio from baseball, and I got so distracted that I moved the phone. Let's let you hear again. No, this is only like 4 or 5 minutes. We had a chance to, after we talked with Butch Thompson, they brought in tomorrow night's starting pitcher, Jake Marciano, who is a lefty transfer, is going to be the opening night starter, and Lucas Steele, one of the team captains. And we had a chance to talk with them for a little bit earlier this afternoon.
I can hear Mr. Lucas.
Act like you like each other a little bit.
No, that's mine. Sorry. Mine's all right. There we go.
Very good?
Yep.
All right, questions for Jake and Lucas. Brian?
Jake, what does it mean to you to earn that opening day start, and how do you feel like you progressed since, you know, a year ago when you played as a freshman?
It's a good feeling. I mean, obviously, we worked towards it all fall and spring. It wasn't really, like, something I was, like, necessarily expecting, but, like, my goal was a weekend start, and what Butch talked about was just throwing strikes, and, like, that was his number one thing, so I felt like that was my goal, just throw strikes, and I felt like he held up to his word, and that's how it worked.
How does it feel to be that guy, though?
No, it's a really good honor. I mean, obviously, I haven't ever been, like, a start on a Friday night, and I'm just really excited.
Jason?
Lucas, a lot of options and maybe a lot of moving around early, and that may include some outfield for you. How much fun has that been to kind of broaden out and become an outfielder?
Yeah, it's fun. I played outfield a little bit my freshman year, and that was a first for me, and haven't been there in 3 years, so it's a little fun to get out there and be with the guys that I'm normally not with at practice. It's a little bit of a change working with that big wall we got out there. But it's fun out there in the grass, as we like to say. I'm trying to get him to put a U on my roster, but we'll see what George has to do about it.
Bill? Yeah, Lucas, you're pretty much the you're the old man of the bunch. I mean, but you've got a lot of guys that have played. But I mean, just talk a little bit about, you know, your role as a leader, and then what you think as far as possibilities out of this offense.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think we're going to mash offensively. I think we got a whole lineup. We got probably 13 guys that could play at any moment throughout the season and do just fine. And then being a leader, it means a lot for me to be selected by these guys. It's just all about showing what I have experienced and putting it through them and teaching, not teaching them, but almost showing them the way and making sure they're okay, and also making sure they have fun every day, because I know what it's like to go out there and not have fun and then kind of dread every day, but also know how it feels to have fun. So showing the younger guys, you know, go out there, have fun every day, make sure you soak in every moment, because, I mean, we only have 4 years, and my 4 years went by pretty quick.
Mackenzie?
Question for both of y'all. You're ranked in the top 10. What are you trying to prove this weekend?
I mean, for me, I don't really think it means just being ranked. Obviously, this weekend, I think we just go out and we just play. We don't have to do anything really too special. I feel like we just got to go out. Like he said, hitters are going to mash, pitchers are going to shove. That's about it.
Yeah, we don't like to look into the rankings too much, whether we were number one or whether we were 313th or whatever it was. We don't really look into that because at the end of the day, it's how we play our game that we've prepared for and all that stuff. So we're going out there, we're playing Youngstown State, no matter what we're ranked, no matter what they're ranked.
Jake, I know kind of likewise, there's a lot of options on the mound for y'all, but just this pitching staff, what have you seen out of them in the offseason, and what has it been like to work with them?
It's been great. We have a lot of depth. Like, we, on the left side and the right side, there's a lot of guys throwing strikes, a lot of guys that are just, like, really competing well, and I feel like throughout the season we're going to be really good.
When you have that quality staff full of competitors and you have a coaching staff that came to you and said, hey, the way you get to start is by throwing strikes, is it harder to actually land the stuff in the strike zone or to trust your stuff knowing that, hey, I got to put as many balls in the strike zone as possible and the hitters know that?
For me, I am like a strike thrower. That's like one of the things I do. So I felt like for me, it was kind of like, it was hard to like believe just throwing strikes would get outs, but it's true. If you just throw strikes, they're going to swing more and they're going to get themselves out. So I feel like that's how I just trust my stuff and use it to my advantage.
Brian?
Lucas, Butch talked about the 13 and 14 guys that could be in the lineup, and he said the thing he'll be watching closely, one of the things would be the guys that don't get in the lineup on a particular day, their attitude and stuff. As a captain, is that something that you're going to be present with or keep an eye on too?
Absolutely. You know, everybody can't play at once, and that's something we have to deal with, and we all work so hard to play, and then it kind of like a shot to the heart when you don't. And I was in a little bit of that situation last year where I didn't play, and I just try to weed through these guys. You know, you got to keep your head up. At the end of the day, we all have the same name on the front of our jersey. It doesn't matter what's on the back. So we're all trying to achieve the end goal. So that's what I'm trying to get through these guys when they aren't playing, or maybe they think they should be playing, or they might get pinch hits. No matter what it is, just we're all playing for Auburn.
Everybody good?
All right. Thank you. Again, starting pitcher for tomorrow night, and Jake Marciano, the lefty, and Lucas Steele meeting with the media a little earlier this afternoon. We're going to get to our final break of the afternoon. Still a little time if you'd like to join in, 334-321-1390, as we wind it down here on the Thursday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on this Thursday. A fun show today. Our thanks to Justin Ferguson for joining me in the first half hour. Don, thanks to you for coming in. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And then, of course, David Pascal here in hour number two. So that's been a fun show. I'm trying to find out. I had a little notification. But then it looks like that's AI or old news. I mean, on Trinidad Chambliss.
No,
because there was a hearing today before a judge in Mississippi where Trinidad Chambliss trying to, he is seeking a temporary and permanent injunction against the NCAA to allow him a sixth year of eligibility. And as David said, tomorrow's Joey Aguilar Day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, players are trying to get extra years. And I don't understand, you know, the real reasoning. I mean, there needs to be some reasoning that makes sense. Trinidad Chambliss has played, you know, he's more than 4 years, and he wants another year, saying that 1 year when he only got to play in four games, he really didn't feel well in those four games because he had tonsillitis or tonsillectomy. I know that can definitely sap your strength. But yeah. He'd already redshirted. Then he had that year when he had that. And his contention was that he felt his Ferris State coach coaches or the athletic department was going to seek an extra year of eligibility for him. But that was 5 years ago. I guess he didn't seem concerned about it then or for the next 4 years, until he ran out of eligibility at Ole Miss and now seeking an extra year. And Joey Aguilar, I'm not sure exactly what his argument is. But look, I mean, there seems to be so much not just apprehension, but I mean, the NCAA seems so much against just saying, all right, you can play five. You got 5 years, play five. Play as much as you can in 5 years. Yeah. And then if there is a real extenuating circumstance, maybe they could do something about it. But it would be so much simpler, and the NCAA has been staunchly against that. And now you have players coming out. I saw there was a guy the other day that was granted his ninth year of eligibility. Ninth year of eligibility.
Wow.
Look, no, college needs to be for college. And I understand if somebody's late getting to college, I don't want to put an age limit on it, but there needs to be a time limit.
Yeah, five for five.
Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, so tomorrow, I mean, we could be talking about Trinidad Chambliss. What
there
happened
might be
there?
Something else by tomorrow.
Joey Aguilar. But we will be talking opening night of baseball tomorrow. Looking forward to that over at Sanford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park, and looking ahead of the big weekend in college basketball. Fun show today. Again, our thanks to our guests today. But the music's playing. That means we're out of time for the Thursday edition of The Drive. Don, thanks again. We'll see you tomorrow, I guess.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. See you tomorrow.
Deal. All right, that's going to do it for the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.